Welcome to J-Pod Charlotte. I'm your host, Emily Russell. Each week, I hope to inform and educate you about a program going on within the Jewish community. Let's get started. Thank you for tuning in today to J-Pod Charlotte. Today's topic is Community Organizing 101 and 102 at Temple Beth-El. In another version of my life, I would like to be an activist. The version where I have more time to work towards change, rather than just making sure all the regular balls in my life don't fall to the ground. Maybe a more realistic option is to learn more about community organizing. In December, Rabbi Judy mentioned that Queen's University was exploring a community organizing master's program, and then I saw Temple Beth-El's community organizing classes on the community calendar. I'm either paying too close attention, or this is a sign that I need to explore this topic more for myself. So selfishly, because 2 3-hour sessions is a small commitment compared to 2 years, I reached out to Rabbi Dusty Klass, the associate rabbi at Temple Beth-El, to learn more about her upcoming classes, even though I'm not a member of Temple Beth-El. I thought establishing ground rules for what is social action versus social justice and how political can a religious organization be was a good place to start.
The way that I tend to speak about social action and social justice is that social action is more direct service oriented, and that social justice is more long range policy change directed. They're both really key. The other way that we often talk about it is that social action is making the sandwiches and giving them to people who are hungry right now. And social justice is figuring out how to make the line shorter so that there are less people waiting for sandwiches every day. I will say this loud for the people in the back. We are allowed to be very, very political. We are not allowed to be partisan. And those are very different things, though people have somehow forgotten that things like whether or not our earth will survive us is not actually partisan. We're really, really, really having a hard time in this country determining the difference between what is speaks to a candidate and what speaks to a policy. So we can take stands on policies, we can take stands on legislation frequently, we cannot support any particular candidate.
In 2016, the shooting of Keith Lamont Scott and the community aftermath made the Temple Beth-El board question their place in the community around race. A task force was assembled to explore ways membership could be involved in community organizing and which issues spoke to them. Equity in education, affordable housing, and criminal justice rose to the top.
In September of 2016, right after I arrived in Charlotte, as I think many, many people know and remember, Keith Lamont Scott was shot and killed by police officers, and that sparked what is called many, many different things at this point, but protests at minimum, an uprising on a different, people call it all sorts of things. I ended up in the midst of those protests as a clergy person, as part of the Charlotte Clergy Coalition for Justice, and experienced some of that really firsthand. But I think our whole city really paid attention, at least for a few weeks, really strongly to this bubbling up of racial inequity that is here and has been here for years and years and years, but sometimes subsides and then grows again. So in the weeks after the shooting, the Temple Beth-El board was meeting and asked, so what are we doing about race? And our social justice chair, our Tzedek Council chair, Annie Lord, almost fell off her chair. and then she sat up and said, well, would you like us to do something? And they said, yes, please. So we put together a task force to figure out kind of where we were and what we were capable of doing even. And because both Rabbi Knight and I have community organizing in our background, and because race and racial inequity is gigantic, it is a huge, huge problem. You can't wrap your arms around it. And community organizing is very good for things you can't wrap your arms around. We decided that we'd try building a community organizing team. So the first step there is training, and we trained a team. And then the next step is to really listen to the community and see kind of, okay, the board said, what are we doing about race? what does anyone else in the congregation think about what we should or shouldn't do about race in Charlotte? So we asked. We talked to 250 people in the congregation, and those 250 people came up with a number of stories. They shared stories about their own experiences of race, both in Charlotte and growing up, and what they wish Charlotte looked like in an ideal world. And we gathered all of that data, and the three issues that really raised the surface were education and housing and criminal justice.
Listening, learning, and educating are the first steps in finding your way forward in the huge umbrella of racial inequity.
So the trajectory has been listening, and from listening, we came up with these three issues, and we went in two directions around those issues. One was research, and that meant that people from our team went out and talked to other people in the city who were already doing this work in other ways to figure out where we might be able to make an impact. And the other thing that came out of those listening circles, those conversations, was the importance of education and learning more about each of these issues and how each of these issues directly is tied to racial inequity. So last year we ran a learning series, a 5-part learning series, and we brought in phenomenal speakers, thanks in large part to Emily Zimmern and Katrina Burton Nichols, who are both phenomenal members of our community and also very connected in with the greater Charlotte community and able to really help us bring phenomenal people to teach us and to learn with us. And throughout that entire year, we were also doing research to figure out what to do. And that led us into campaign season, which is less scary when you're talking about community organizing than is when you're talking about the political system, and landed on kind of two ways forward, one in education and one in criminal justice. And we decided to actually hold off to pause the housing piece of all of this because the affordable housing conversation is really saturated right now. And one of the principles of community organizing is that you've got to find something that you're uniquely, your group, your population is uniquely able to contribute. We couldn't find a way that we could uniquely contribute as a community. And so we're going to let the dust settle and figure out how we can put ourselves back in the ring once there's a clearly defined ring to put ourselves in there.
So the main goal for hosting Community Organizing 101 and 102 is not just for educating, but to continue to build a leadership pipeline.
We've been running these trainings for a couple of years now. One of the important parts about community organizing is to create a leadership pipeline, important in lots of different places, actually. But developing new leaders is really, really key in organizing because organizing is long, slow, methodical, intentional work. And most people have about 2 years of that in them, and then they need a break. So we're constantly working to bring new people into the system to help kind of build out new leadership. So the 101 and 102 trainings are one of the first inroads to developing leaders and to getting people knowledgeable about the basic principles of organizing so that when they sit down in an issue team meeting, or if they say, well, I really want to help out with this driver's license clinic, but how did you even get to a driver's license clinic? This training gives them the background of how community organizing gets from gigantic problem of racial inequity to driver's license clinic as part of a solution to racial inequity.
This work seems more prevalent in reform communities due to its prophetic teachings and the idea of a partnership between humans and God to make change in the world.
So, right. So I think the first part of the question is, why do Jews care about any of this in the first place? And the second is, why is it so prevalent in the reform Jewish community? Because you will find phenomenal social justice work happening in the conservative movement and in the modern Orthodox world as well. It's smaller pockets, and it's not as movement-wide as it is in the reform world. And there's a lot of reasons. There's a lot of answers to the question of why Judaism and why Reform Judaism in particular. I would say that One is that the reform movement is really founded on the importance of raising the prophetic tradition. So the Bible's actually bigger than the Torah, right? There's all these prophets. They said really important things. A lot of what they said was, hey, cut it out. You're doing it wrong, right? God said, pay attention to all of these people, not yourselves, right? And as it turns out, many people's favorite Jew, Jesus, was also big on the prophets, right? Which is why so much of what we see in the world today sounds like that as well, right? And the early Reform movement really focused in on the messages of the prophets. So Reform Judaism's really founded on a prophetic tradition, which means that the things that the prophets were doing are really deeply embedded into how Reform Jews see themselves acting in the world. So many people in my community will give you ambiguous answers on God, will give you ambiguous answers on prayer, and most of them can tell you Tikkun Olam is important in Judaism, and that they actually live their Judaism through Tikkun Olam, repair of the world, right? And they'll be in the middle of a paragraph or a sentence, and they'll say, oh, and you know, Tikkun Olam, right? They just sprinkle the word into everything that happens as if it will explain whatever it is that they're doing with their lives. And I think that comes from Isaiah and from Jeremiah and from all of these prophets that said, you, people, human beings, have to partner with God on all of this. Because in Reform Judaism, also, we, at least the early reformers, were very connected in with science and the scientific movements of the day. And so they could no longer say, ah, yes, God just like poof makes things happen, right? Because we now know that the poof that makes things happen is this and this working together in atoms and blah, 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 right? So if you have to combine and understand those two things together, right, God and science, one of the ways to let God not be the be-all end-all is to give human beings some responsibility for each other. And that's where the prophets come in, and that's where our commitment to Tikkun Olam comes in. And I'd say it all exists in Judaism writ large.
Learning about yourself helps you engage in learning about others and building relationships.
One of the questions that I like to ask when people choose to come to a meeting at 7 p.m. any time of the week is, where are you coming from? And I mean that both literally and metaphorically, right? Because it gives us a sense of who's in the room. So, and people will answer all sorts of things. I'm coming from the dentist, right? And then we know that, like, we should not give her anything hard to eat for the rest of the evening, right? But sometimes people say, I'm coming out of illness and I'm just happy to be in a room with other people again, or whatever that means, right? So, like, yes, people, when I say what's your story, I don't mean, like, what's your sob story? I don't mean, like we don't have to play persecution Olympics with, like, who's had more pain and anguish and suffering in their life. I have been incredibly blessed to live an incredibly, incredibly safe life. And I grew up in a community surrounded by people who didn't look like me. And I went to a school with a bunch of kids who called me little white girl because that was a defining characteristic of who I was in comparison to everybody else around me, right? Is that a bad thing or a good thing? No, but it helped develop who I am. So when I say what's your story, what I'm saying is, how did you become the human being that I'm seeing today? What are the points? What are the pivot moments? How have you experienced how have you experienced being a woman in the world? Has it always been clear-cut, simple, and clean? Have you ever felt like something happened or didn't happen because of your gender, identity, sex, the way you presented yourself, your religion, right? Everybody's got something that has helped develop who they are as a human being and helped shape how they act in the world. And those stories give us a sense of who people are on a deeper level. And then later down the road, when we all are standing together as part of something, I know more about who you are, where you came from, and what you care about So when I call you and say, I need you to come with me to talk to the mayor about affordable housing, and I know this matters to you because you grew up in an apartment and everybody else around you lived in actual houses and that was weird for you, right? And I know that already, and otherwise I don't. And growing up in an apartment isn't a sob story, but it is part of what developed a person.
Community organizing is for people who want to change the world and are willing to look deeper than the surface.
We want people to join us who are curious about organizing, who are curious in general. I think curiosity is a key component of what organizing requires. We're looking for people who want to build relationships and are willing to sit in a little bit of discomfort about around that. I think we have a lot of really lovely surface conversations with the people around us day to day, and even the people who are the most important to us. And we don't often give ourselves the opportunity or the chance to go below that surface level question. And organizing does that. And this training in particular is going to go there pretty quickly. So that's an important thing to know as well. And I mean, you have to want to change the world. You have to be able to acknowledge that something is broken that needs fixing. And you have to acknowledge that it's likely you won't be able to fix it yourself. And you have to be interested in what it might look like to work with a bunch of other people to do that repair.
Before I get to the last piece of this, I have a quick side story. I recently attended the unveiling of two One Charlotte Health Alliance mobile food pharmacies. One Charlotte Health Alliance is a partnership between Novant Health, Atrium Health, and Mecklenburg County Health Department, which also grew out of the 2016 unrest. Because to truly tackle the health needs of certain areas in Charlotte, they needed to partner together to move the needle. They took their alliance and then partnered with Blue Cross Blue Shield of North Carolina to roll out two mobile health units, and then with Loaves and Fishes for two brand new mobile food pharmacies. Coalitions, alliances, partnerships, whatever you want to call it, really do make a bigger difference. So the last part of community organizing is key, partnering with other organizations doing the same work to increase your reach.
One of the most beautiful things about organizing is the partnerships. So the one of the phrases that you, I think we hear it now more often than we used to, but partnering across lines of faith, class, and difference, right, is this phrase that I think gets bandied about in the world. But that is what organizing does at its core, is say, okay, so Friendship Missionary Baptist Church, you've been doing great social justice work in these areas. Turns out we're hoping to do some great social justice work in these areas, and we're both working on criminal justice issues. What are you doing around criminal justice? Ah, okay, here's how we can be helpful to you. The goal is ultimately to actually build organizing into this city so that faith institutions, and maybe other nonprofit institutions in general, community institutions, can come together institutionally and again, like, stand with each other, right? Because Temple Beth El is, what, 2,500 human beings, almost 1,000 families. That's a large number. But if you add that number to 2,000 people in all sorts of other places, then all of a sudden you're representing 25,000 people, 30,000 people, and people who make decisions listen to 30,000 people.
If you're interested, mark your calendar for these 2 3-hour sessions starting on Wednesday, March 4th with Community Organizing 101 and Sunday, April 5th with Community Organizing 102. You can learn more at templebethel.org. If things go in my favor, I will be joining this group to learn about myself and how I can partner to make progress. A big thank you to Rabbi Dusty Klass for all of her expertise and work she does to make our whole community healthier and more informed. And one more thing I want to share. The application for the Shalom Park Freedom School Teen Board is now open until March 23rd. Teen Board members volunteer as school assistants and commit to at least 2 consecutive weeks between June 22nd and July 30th. Responsibilities include working in the classrooms, accompanying teachers and students on field trips, planning activities for the classroom, securing and delivering supplies, and other assistance as needed. They swim with the scholars, and teen board members fundraise to sponsor a young scholar for the summer. All helpful links have been added to the details of this episode. Thank you for listening. Feedback can be sent to jpodcharlotte, jpodclt@gmail.com. And as always, have a wonderful week.